chapter is one of the most philosophical chapters in the entire first canto. The purports that Prabhupada has included are very, very long, but they are very meaningful, and there are many classic purports in the first canto. Classic purports, where Prabhupada speaks in inimitable style, and they stick in one's consciousness. So this is the last section in that. So in honor of that, we'll read some purports, a few. The next chapter moves very, very, very quickly. And then before we know it, the first day of next week, which is, we have classes on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we'll finish this wonderful story. Actually, within 2 days, Narada Muni will leaving Vyasadeva all alone. And we'll hear what Vyasadeva does. Very exciting, actually. He has a full revelation of the Absolute Truth. But before that, Narada Muni, he has just discussed what happened to him, his great fortune. The source of his fortune was not his birth, not his intelligence. The source of his fortune was good association, the Bhakti Vedantas. Bhagyavan Jeev, when the Jiva becomes fortunate, Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai, Pai Bhakti Lati Bhish. He gets the bhakti, the seed of devotion which will grow. And this comes first by association. So, Narada was a good boy. And because of that, he wasn't at all... he was very serious. Very rare, actually, for a young boy to be serious. Because a youth or a child looks before him and he sees unlimited possibilities for material enjoyment. His whole life stretches before him in his mind's eye, and he sees all the things he could enjoy. But actually, he won't be able to enjoy. We know that. We're experienced. But the young boy does not know that. He sees life as meant for playing, sporting, enjoying. But Narada was not like that. So due to the association of the Bhaktivedantas, because he was very grave, especially for a young boy, and he had a serving mood towards them, sevaya, pariprasnena seva, and he took the remnants of their food, he served them, he heard from them, and he got a taste similar to their associate. Because of their association, he achieved a taste similar to their taste. What they liked, he began to like. So they liked Krishna Katha, and he, that taste, grew within his heart like a flower blossoms in the spring. So once only with their permission, what did he do? He took the remnants of their food. And this is very, very purifying. And his sins by their association, the anartas, were vanquished. And before they left, they instructed him in confidential knowledge about Krishna. And that confidential knowledge about Krishna, our acharyas have described, and Srila Prabhupada has described in his purport, was the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, which explains how it is Krishna, God, who is the source of everything. He existed before the creation, he's everywhere in the creation, and yet he is aloof from the creation, and he'll exist after the creation, and he maintains the creation. And he has an existence that's completely separate from everything, yet nothing is separate from him. Very mysterious. And by this, as in text 31 describes, because of this confidential knowledge, Narada Muni could understand that Krishna's maya, or Krishna's Krishna's energy, not only external energy, but Krishna's energy was the influencing factor for the jiva. That one, influenced by the internal energy, the yoga maya, he is living forever, ecstatically serving Krishna in the spiritual world. This internal energy is Krishna's devotion. But influenced by the reflection of that internal energy, not yogamaya, but mahamaya, then the living entity, rather than serving Krishna directly, serves Krishna indirectly in the material world. And oh, so much suffering. So much suffering. Birth after birth after birth. Budva, budva, praliyate. Destroyed. Created, destroyed, ratre agama vishamparta. Every night of Brahma destroyed, every day recreated. Trying to, possessed of so many desires, trying to fulfill those desires, always frustrated, always envious. Oh, the mercy of the external energy. So Narada understood this. So now we will begin text 32. And we'll try to get to text 40. Itat sam suchitam brahmam stapatraya chakshitam yadishvare bhagavati kama brahmani bhavitam. So, O Brahmana Vyasadeva, Narada is speaking. It is decided by the learned that the best remedial measure for removing all troubles and miseries, in other words, from going from the external energy, which means troubles and miseries, to the internal energy, whether we're in the material world or the spiritual world, because if we're under the shelter of the internal energy, we're in the spiritual world. One is ecstatic, actually. So, the best remedial measure for removing all troubles or removing the soul from the shelter of Maya and moving him to the shelter of the internal energy, the best remedial measure is to dedicate one's activities to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. What does this mean? Prabhupada explains it in his purport. But the idea is that the living entity is on this side. This side means the Maya side. Struggling with the material energy. And he's working, 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 working. And his consciousness, the mood of his consciousness is, let me enjoy. That Purusha, he's thinking himself Purusha, Prakriti Sto, Bhunkte, Prakriti Jan. He's trying to enjoy those things produced of the external energy. And he's looking, his whole vision, because his heart is fixed in this, under the spell of material enjoyment. He sees everything through that, with that vision. How can I exploit it? How can I enjoy it? So, he has to stop that. We work so hard to enjoy the fruit of our work. And that is what traps us in the material world. So when we take that work, and rather than working for my enjoyment, but rather act for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is what Narada is saying. Is the method of getting free from the bondage of work, from the bondage of this mood that the material world is meant for my pleasure. Rather just work for Krishna and see everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. This is called what? Karma Yoga. Now, Krishna, or Narada rather, is going to explain Karma Yoga and what the result of Karma Yoga is. But here he's saying it as if karma yoga was everything. But actually, it's explained that it's not everything. But rather, it leads. It leads to the loving service of Krishna, if it is done properly. Now, the elements of practicing working for Krishna properly are described here. And make note of them. And I would like everyone to especially make note of what is the essence of the process of karma yoga, which is also, in fact, it is bhakti, what the essence of the process of bhakti. And that is the essence of the process of karma yoga. And we'll get to that. But first, Prabhupada in his purport explains about karma yoga. It does not matter what one is. One must dedicate everything in the service of the Lord. If one is a learned scholar, scientist, philosopher, poet, etc., then he should employ his learning to establish the supremacy of the Lord. Try to study the energy of the Lord in every sphere of life. Do not decry him and try to become like him, or take his position simply by fragmental accumulation of knowledge. In other words, don't try to be the enjoyer. Don't try to be the controller. Don't get some partial knowledge and think that you are the supreme, identifying ourselves with the supreme. No! If one is an administrator, statesman, warrior, politician, etc., then one should try to establish the Lord's supremacy in statesmanship. If one has a Kshatriya tendency, one should use that. This is karma yoga. Yat karosi rachnasi, yat chohosi dadati yat, yat tapasyasi kantya, mad kurusva, tat kurusva, madarparam. Offer it to Krishna. Very practical. Fight for the cause of the Lord, as Sri Arjuna did. In the beginning, Sri Arjuna, the great fighter, declined to fight. But when he was convinced by the Lord that the fighting was necessary, Sri Arjuna changed his decision and fought for his cause. Similarly, if one is a businessman, an industrialist, an agriculturalist, etc., then one should spend his hard-earned money for the cause of the Lord. Think always that the money which is accumulated is the wealth of the Lord. Wealth is considered to be the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. And the Lord is Narayan, or the husband of Lakshmi. Try to engage Lakshmi in the service of Lord Narayan and be happy. That is the way to realize the Lord in every sphere of life. The best thing is, after all, to get relief from all material activities and engage oneself completely in hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. But in the case of the absence of such an opportunity, one should try to engage in the service of the Lord, everything for which one has a specific attraction, and that is the way of peace and prosperity. So the essence, that which makes, or the best thing rather, is to always be engaged in chanting and hearing in Shravanam Kirtanam. That is actually the highest position, but it can't be imitated. It can't be imitated. So if we're not on that position, we should work very hard for Krishna. This is the transcendental system. Next verse. So now Narada is going to explain a little further. He's just described a system of working for Krishna, and he gives an example to show its efficacy. O good soul, does not a thing applied therapeutically cure a disease which was caused by that very same thing? And Prabhupada explains in the purport. An expert physician treats his patient with a therapeutic diet. So actually what's going on in this verse is that people will tend to say, when hearing Narada's admonition to Vyas that one should work for Krishna, people will tend to say, I'm suffering so much. I'm struggling in the material world. I've done this, I've done that. And it's only caused me trouble. My work has caused me so much difficulty, so much anxiety. Therefore, the last thing I want to do is work. I want to give up work. But, actually speaking, until one's heart is completely pure, one should not give up work. This is one of the main messages of the Bhagavad Gita. Rather than giving up work, one should work for Krishna. And that same work which has caused one so much trouble in the material world, when done in the service of Krishna, rather than causing trouble, will enlighten one. And therefore the example is given by Narada, which points to, as Prabhupada explains, yogurt. Because yogurt, if one has indigestion from eating too much or eating too many milk products, then the cure for that is yogurt. Eating has caused my problem, and eating something else that's therapeutically treated will cure my problem. Eating causes and eating cures, if it's in the hands of an expert physician. So similarly, work in the material world causes our problem, but when therapeutically treated, that very same work will cure our problem and free us from material bondage. And of course, how to therapeutically treat work, that will be described in different stages here. Prabhupada explains in the purport. An expert physician treats his patient with a therapeutic diet. For example, milk preparations sometimes cause disorder of the bowels. But the very same milk converted into curd and mixed with some other remedial ingredients cures such disorders. Similarly, the threefold miseries of material existence cannot be mitigated simply by material activities. Such activities have to be spiritualized. Just as by fire, iron is made red hot, and thereby the action of fire begins. So even another example. Iron is iron and fire is fire. So when material activities are placed in the fire, material activities are like iron. Iron can't start a fire. But when material activities are placed in the fire of spiritual, of the spiritual, then what happens to that iron? It becomes hotter, 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 red hot, and then you take it out and you can start any fire with red hot iron. So similarly, material activities, when fully spiritualized, are in fact as good as spiritual activities. They are spiritual activities. Now, how do we spiritualize those? That will be described later. We should not try. Similarly, the material conception of a thing is at once changed as soon as it's put into the service of the Lord. So here's the first principle. With this work, we should serve Krishna. Whatever we are, whatever we have, whatever we know how to do, we should serve Krishna with that work. That is the secret, Prabhupada says, of spiritual success. Why is it the secret of spiritual success? Because we cannot stop work. We have to work. Because if we don't work, use our body in Krishna's service, we will end up using our body and working in the service of Maya, and that will entangle us further. So we have to work for Krishna, though. That is the secret. We should not try to lord it over the material nature, nor should we reject material things. The best way to make the best use of a bad bargain is to use everything in relation with the Supreme Spiritual Being. Everything is an emanation from the Supreme Spirit, and by His inconceivable power, He can convert spirit into matter and matter into spirit. Therefore, a material thing, so called, is at once turned into a spiritual force by the great will of the Lord. This necessary condition for such a change is to employ so-called matter in the service of the Spirit. This is the way, that is the way to treat our material disease and elevate ourselves to the spiritual plane where there is no misery, no lamentation, and no fear. So here is basic principles of Krishna consciousness. There are different stages of this, but here is the basic principle that everyone should work. And everyone should work, not for furtive gain, but for Krishna. And before one can work fully for Krishna, giving everything to Krishna, maybe one has to work giving a little bit to Krishna. But yet, although that is purifying, that is not the end. That is not the end at all. Rather, working and giving everything to Krishna is superior than working and giving a little to Krishna. But even superior than working and giving everything to Krishna is loving Krishna. Because naturally, if one loves Krishna, one naturally also gives everything to Krishna. But if one just works and gives everything to Krishna, possibly the love may not be there. One could just be working, detached, doing what one likes to do. Okay, Krishna can have this. I should do something good. But prema bhakti, when one is giving everything to Krishna with full loving devotional surrender, and the residents of Vrindavan are the highest example of this, this is the full manifestation of this principle. But yet it's being described in its stages here. Next verse, text 34. Thus, when all here, so we heard the principle of therapeutically applying something of work in Krishna service. And now it's explained a bit more philosophically. Thus, when all a man's activities are dedicated to the service of the Lord, those very activities which caused his perpetual bondage become the destroyer of the tree of work. So that which causes my problem becomes the cure of my problem if used properly, spiritualized. The cause of my problem is I'm working in the material world and every single thing I do in selfish consciousness entangles me further in the material world. So not that we give up the work, but we give up the selfish consciousness actually. In stages, slowly, quickly or immediately, we do this. Prabhupada's purport is important. Fruit of work, which has perpetually engaged a living being, is compared to the banyan tree in the Bhagavad Gita. What chapter?
15.
Yeah. For it is certain, very deep, certainly very deeply rooted. Anadya Vahimuk. As long as the propensity for enjoying the fruit of work is there, one has to continue the transmigration of the soul from one body or place to another, according to the nature of one's work. The propensity for enjoyment may be turned into the desire for serving the mission of the Lord, because desire has to be there. So we desire, we're desiring all day long. So we turn that desire. If we turn the desire to Krishna's service, Krishna's mission, Krishna's service, then naturally the activities get turned towards Krishna's mission, Krishna's service. So by doing so, turning from the selfish to the Krishna-centered work, one's activity is changed into karma yoga, or the way by which one can attain spiritual perfection while engaging in the work for which one has a natural tendency. Here the word atma indicates all categories of all fruit of work. The conclusion is that when the results of all fruit of and other work is dovetailed with the service of the Lord, it will cease to generate further karma and will gradually develop into transcendental devotional service. So karma yoga is not different from bhakti yoga, transcendental devotional service. It's not different because it leads to bhakti yoga, but yet it is not exactly the same either. Stages of the same thing. Is a unripe mango the same thing as a ripe mango? Yes, in one sense, certainly. But in another sense, it isn't the same, because you can't take a bite out of an unripe mango in the same way and taste the sweet, succulent juice. So it gradually develops into transcendent devotional service, which will not only cut off completely the root of the banyan tree of work, but will also carry the performer to the lotus feet of the Lord. So that's karma yoga leads to bhakti yoga, leads to more bhakti yoga, deeper and more fulfilled and more mature bhakti yoga, which takes us out of the material world into the lotus feet of Krishna, serving forever. So now Prabhupada, in this, the last paragraph of this purport, is going to give a summary of the entire process. The summary is that one has to first of all seek the association of pure devotees who are not only learned in the Vedanta, but are self-realized souls and unalloyed devotees of Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. So this is what happened to Narada Muni. In that association, the neophyte devotees must render loving service, physically and mentally, without reservation. This service attitude will induce the great souls to be more favorable in bestowing their mercy, which injects the neophyte with all the transcendental qualities of the pure devotees. Gradually, this serving spirit, these qualities, this is developed into a strong attachment to what? To hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, which makes him able to catch up the constitutional position of the gross and subtle body. And beyond them, the knowledge of the pure soul and its eternal relation with the supreme soul, the supreme personality of Godhead. After the relation is ascertained by establishment of the eternal relation, pure devotional service to the Lord begins gradually developing into perfect knowledge of the personality of Godhead beyond the purview of impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma. So this transcendental knowledge that's being described, this knowledge of one's own relationship to Krishna. By such, Purushottam Yoga, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, what chapter is entitled Purushottam Yoga? 15, yes, thank you. One is made perfect even during the present corporeal existence. Corporeal existence, that means bodily existence, one can be perfect. Jivan Muktasukhite. And one exhibits all the good qualities of the Lord to the highest percentage that one is capable of. Such is the gradual development by association of pure devotees. Text 35. Whatever work is done here in this life, for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord, is called bhakti yoga, or transcendental loving service of the Lord. And what is called knowledge becomes a concomitant factor. So the idea there is that the non-devotees will tend to think that that bhakti yoga is some type of karma, karma yoga. And the purpose of karma or action is to get knowledge, and the purpose of getting knowledge is inaction, no activity. But that is not the case, as Narada Muni is explaining here. The purpose of bhakti yoga is to develop more loving service to the Lord, not inactivity. Because knowledge follows bhakti automatically. Bhakti itself is independent. While knowledge, one's acquiring knowledge, is dependent on bhakti, but bhakti is dependent on nothing. One doesn't need knowledge to get bhakti, knowledge of Brahman. One needs another kind of knowledge. Indeed, one needs knowledge of the glories of Krishna, which is bhakti. So bhakti is coming from bhakti in that case. Bhakti does not come from knowledge. That was already explained previously with that verse, that even achutta, what's that verse? Achutta bhava vargo. What is it? That even, that Narada has previously told Vyas, that even knowledge that is wonderfully formed, beautiful books, that isn't connected to Krishna is useless. And not only that, but knowledge that of Brahman that doesn't describe the glories of the Lord, that is also useless. Knowledge comes automatically to a devotee, one who is actually a devotee. Jnaniyat yasu vairagyam jnanam chayarahaktikam. Vasudeve Bhagavati, by rendering devotional service to Vasudeva. Now here, in text 36, so one works hard for Krishna according to one's tendency, for Krishna's pleasure. And this for Krishna's pleasure, working for Krishna's pleasure, not for my own satisfaction. Turns that activity, even from karma yoga, to bhakti. So therefore in text 36, while performing duties according to the order of Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one constantly remembers Him, His names and His qualities. Kovana yatra kamani bhagavat chakishayat sakrit grinanti gunanamani krishna yasyanu smaranticha. Krishna, of Krishna, anusmaranti, constantly remembers Him. This is also described in the Bhagavad Gita. Chaitasya savakamani maya sanyasimatpara buddhiyogama prasrita machita satatambhava. While working for Krishna, one should constantly think of Him. Thinking that this duty is for Krishna's pleasure. And while working for Krishna's pleasure, one naturally thinks of pleasing Him. And that's remembrance of Krishna. So when one is constantly remembering Krishna with devotion, in this way, this is perfection. Ananya sintyantamam yejana paripasate tesham nitya vyuktinam yoga chemam vaham yaham. Krishna takes care, such careful care of such a devotee who is always thinking of Him while working for His pleasure. And I'm going to read some of this purport. A pure devotee remembers this constantly. What is this? This refers to that Krishna is the enjoyer and the controller, and He's the Supreme Lord. So a pure devotee knows that his work is for the pleasure, not of himself, but for Krishna's pleasure, because He is the one who is meant to enjoy. So a pure devotee remembers this constantly, and in doing so, he repeats the transcendental name, fame, and qualities of the Lord, which means that he is constantly in touch with the Lord. The Lord is identical with His name, fame, etc., and therefore to be associated with His name, fame, etc., constantly, means actually to associate with the Lord. So here's the principle, that we should always chant and always remember Krishna. This is perfection, because in that chanting and in that remembrance and in that speaking about Krishna, Krishna is actually present. The major portion of our monetary income, not less than 50%, must be spent to carry out the order of Lord Krishna. Not only should we give the profit of our earnings to the cause, this cause, but we must also arrange to preach this cult of devotion to others, because that is also one of the orders of the Lord. The Lord definitely says that no one is more dear to him than one who is always engaged in the preaching work of the Lord's name and fame all over the world. The scientific discoveries of the material world can also be equally engaged in carrying out his order. He wants the message of the Bhagavad Gita to be preached amongst his devotees. It may not be so done amongst those who have no credit of austerity, charity, education, etc. Therefore, the attempt must go on to convert unwilling men to become his devotees. Lord Chaitanya has taught a very simple method in this connection. He has taught the lesson for preaching the transcendental message through singing, dancing, and refreshment. As such, 50% of our income may be spent for this purpose. In this fallen age of quarrel and dissension, if only the leading and wealthy persons of society agreed to spend 50% of their income in the service of the Lord, as is taught by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there is absolute certainty of converting this hell of pandemonium to the transcendental abode of the Lord. No one will disagree to partake in a function where good singing, dancing, and refreshment are administered. Everyone will attend such a function, and everyone is sure to feel individually the transcendental presence of the Lord. This alone will help the attendant associate with the Lord and thereby purify himself in spiritual realization. The only condition for successfully executing such spiritual activities is that they must be conducted under the guidance of a pure devotee who is completely free from mundane desires, fruit of activities, and dry speculation about the nature of the Lord. And then Prabhupada explains that someone should not be thinking that he himself is God, who is performing such activities. No one has to discover the nature of the Lord. It is already spoken by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita especially, and in all other Vedic literatures generally. We have simply to accept them in toto and abide by the orders of the Lord that will guide us to the path of perfection. One can remain in his own position. No one has to change his position, especially in this age of variegated difficulties. The only condition is that one must give up the habit of dry speculation aimed at becoming one with the Lord. This tendency of Mayavad, tendency of becoming one with the Lord, is worse than the tendency to want to enjoy those things produced of matter. It is a more difficult weed to pull from the heart, and it will choke and stop one from ever attaining the service of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. This is described by Srila Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It is the most difficult seed of problem to remove from the heart. So therefore, it has been described by Mahaprabhu that one should not associate. That story of Mukunda Dutta explains. Mukunda Dutta was going outside and hearing from Mayavadis, and therefore Mahaprabhu kicked him out of his association for that, until he understood that he wouldn't do that anymore. Because if Mayavadis are aparadis, and even it is said that even a Mahabhagavat can fall down from his position if he hears and associates with Mayavadis. So contaminating. So after giving up such lofty, puffed up vanities that one could become God, one may very submissively receive the orders of the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam from the lips of a bona fide devotee whose qualification is mentioned above. That will make everything successful without a doubt. 37. Therefore, what's been described up to this point is that one should work hard in Krishna's service and remember him while one's working. And the best thing, it has been described, if one could just hear and chant continuously. But one should work to purify the heart. But one should think about Krishna, remember Krishna, remember his form, qualities, pastimes, and activities, that he's the Supreme Lord and we are tiny, insignificant servants. One should do this and focus one's mind on Krishna. Mama tasmat saveshu kaleshu mama nusmara yudhyaja, Krishna tells Arjuna. Therefore, text 37, let us all chant the glories of Vasudeva along with his plenary expansions, Padumna, Aniruddha, and Shankarshan. So this ends one little section, the description of the process of working perfectly in Krishna's service and purifying the heart in that way. And therefore, so one may ask the question, why does just remembering Krishna or speaking about Krishna or glorifying Krishna, why does that purify the heart? So then in text 38, thus he is the actual seer who worships in the form of transcendental sound representation the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who has no material form. So the idea is that Krishna, the sound vibration, Abhinatam Namanamano, the sound vibration Krishna, and Krishna the person, the actual person, is the same. Krishna's glories, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's form, Krishna's name, Krishna's qualities, they are all Krishna. Therefore, when one associates with Krishna's name by remembering him, by chanting him, by hearing about him, by talking about him, then one is actually associating with Krishna through this transcendental sound vibration or thought of Krishna. And this is Vishmatavyo na jatu chit sava virina sheda cha etya eva kinkara. Smartavyo satatam Vishnu. Always remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna is the essence of all the rules and regulations. This is the purpose of sadhana. This is what all the rules and regulations that we follow are meant to do. They're meant to fill our mind constantly with thoughts of Krishna. And that is the perfection of the rules and regulations. Because to have Krishna in the consciousness and in thought means to have Krishna in one's consciousness, in person. And what is the result of that? One works for Krishna, one thinks of Krishna, one offers one's work, the fruits of one's work to him, one works, offers the work itself to him. Then one remembers Krishna, that this is meant for an offering to him, the Lord. Then the result is described by Narada Muni in text 39. O Brahmana, thus by the Supreme Lord Krishna, I was endowed first with transcendental knowledge of the Lord, as inculcated in the confidential part of the Vedas. First with transcendental knowledge of the Lord, his position, which includes all the glories of the Lord. Then with the spiritual opulences, which are described as the eight mystic powers, they automatically come. So by engaging in this process, I was endowed with first transcendental knowledge of the Lord. That means all the fruit of jnana came, plus so much more by just engaging and chanting the glories of Krishna. Then all mystic opulences, all karma and jnana and all fruits of yoga came. And then with the ultimate fruit of bhakti, which is his intimate loving service. So there's no need of karma yoga, jnana yoga, karma yoga meaning karma kanda or any type of fruit of work, or jnana yoga centering in renunciation, Vedanta and meditation. One doesn't need to do that to come close to the Lord, Narada is explaining. Rather, one just needs to engage directly in devotional service and hearing and chanting. So therefore, 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita says, Sasukam kartam avyam. That is very joyfully performed. Because one just has to hear and chant about Krishna. But, as Prabhupada explains, by such, because one contacts Krishna in that directly. We've just heard that verse. But then, as Prabhupada explains, by such pure contact with the Lord without offense, there is one difficult part of it. No offenses of material conceptions, numbering 10. The devotee can rise above the material plane to understand the inner meaning of the Vedic literature, including the Lord's existence in the transcendental realm. The Lord reveals his identity gradually to one who has unflinching faith, both in the spiritual master and in the Lord. Yasya deve parabhaktir. And therefore, because the Lord's glories are so powerful, they add the spiritual nature, because they are spiritual. The Lord's glories are Krishna. They are spiritual. They're Krishna himself. So because they're so powerful and they have the potency to spiritualize all work even. And therefore, text 40, Narada tells Srila Vyasadeva, please therefore describe the Almighty Lord's activities which you have learned by your vast knowledge of the Vedas. For that will satisfy the hankerings of the great learned men and at the same time mitigate the sufferings of the masses of common people who are always suffering from such material pangs. Indeed, there is no other way to get out of such miseries. So this Bhagavatam is the fruit of Narada Muni's instructions to Srila Vyasadeva, because the Bhagavatam simply contains the glories of Krishna. There's nothing other than the glories of Krishna and Krishna's devotees in the Bhagavatam. So when one hears that, one should build up within one's consciousness, it should naturally occur by the process of hearing. One should naturally get the desire to serve that Lord because he is all attractive. And how should we serve him? First with our fruit of our work, then our work, then gradually with full knowledge of the Lord. Gradually one should develop great attachment to the Lord. And gradually one should develop love for Krishna and be fixed forever in his service. This is the process that Vyas is going to put within the Bhagavatam based on hearing the glories of the Lord, which are transcendentally potent, being the Lord himself. Okay. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that there are four in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. There's Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukriti Narjana. There are four types of pious men described. Arta Gigyasa Arta Tikyani Cha Bharatasava. Those who are looking for wealth, those who are in distress, those who are curious, and those who are looking for knowledge. When they are sukritinas, when they are pious, they will take shelter of Krishna in their search for these things. So that's very good, because they'll be purified. And then they'll even lose those desires and be engaged in pure devotional service. But also there's described namam duṣkṛtinau mudha papadyante naradama. There are four kinds of impious souls. Not sukṛtinas, but duṣkṛtinas, who are impious. Mudha, naradama, mayaya apita jñānam, and asura bhav, those possessing asura bhavam, the demonic, those whose knowledge is of Krishna is covered by those whose relationship with Krishna is covered by knowledge, those who are foolish asses who just work fruitively, and the naradamas, those who engage in any old type of vicious activity in their search for material pleasures. So these are called duṣkṛtinas. They are not pious, they are duṣkṛtinas. So there's four pious and four impious. And all of them, all eight, will be benefited by the process of hearing the Bhagavatam. So this is wonderful. So what is the qualification for hearing the Bhagavatam? Basically, you just need to exist. So we have that at least. Maybe we don't have much else, but at least we have that. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? If we chant properly, or hear Bhagavatam properly, or read Bhagavatam properly, not even continuously, but for even 15 minutes or a half hour or an hour, depending upon how deeply we are immersed in the modes of material nature, immediately there's an upliftment. Immediately. Yes? Because our qualification isn't as extraordinary. No. But Krishna comes according to the consciousness also. He reveals himself according to our consciousness rather our consciousness allows, just like a materialistic person can be chanting Krishna's names. And who was it? I think Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura has described it's just chanting alphabet, or a parrot is chanting. Krishna isn't there. But when a pure devotee chants Krishna's names, what's that verse? Naham prakasham vaikunte yogi nam hridaye shuva tat tishtami narada Gayanti Madbhakta. Where am I? Krishna says, I'm there. I come myself when my devotees are chanting my glories. So when our devotion is highest, then Krishna is fully present. So wonderfully though, the process of getting our devotion to that position is the same. That is the absolute nature of Bhakti Yoga. So there are different stages that one can chant on, and different stages that one can hear on. But still the essence of the process of chanting and hearing is the same. It's purifying, and then it's Krishna. Krishna's presence is purifying, and then when one is purified, one becomes realized. Where is that? There's one part of Well, Prabhupada explains it here. Does not want his sons, the living beings, to suffer the threefold miseries of life. He desires that all of them come to him and live with him. But going back to God, it means that one must purify himself from material infections. So So depending upon how purified we are from the material infections, we're able to realize Krishna as we hear his glories and chant his names. The great devotees, when chanting Krishna's names, they're fully experiencing Krishna. But any association, even if one is impure, is beneficial. And even the process of removing offenses from the heart is the same thing. Chanting Hare Krishna. Especially taking shelter of Satchinandan and Nittai.
In the purport to text 36, it seems like Prabhupada's saying the message of the Bhagavad Gita is...
So the question is, if Bhagavad Gita is meant, Bhagavad Gita, for example, is meant for the devotees, why do we give Bhagavad Gita to the non-devotees and try to... how does one go from the stage of non-devotee to devotee if Bhagavad Gita and the chanting of Krishna's name is meant for the devotees, something like that?
Yeah, well, it seems like Prabhupada's saying that chanting, dancing, and prasadam is meant for the non-devotees.
Yeah. And not Bhagavad Gita.
Well, he says that he wants the message of the Bhagavad Gita to be preached amongst the devotees. It may not...
meaning who the Bhagavad Gita is meant for.
Yeah.
But, and in the Surrender Unto Me, I explain this point, actually, where in an earlier verse, possibly in the third chapter, 330-something, the purport Prabhupada explains how the devotees are even more kind than Krishna is. Because they know the purpose of Krishna. It's not that Krishna is excluding the non-devotees, but rather than the non-devotees can't appreciate properly. So rather, the devotees convert the non-devotees into devotees so that they can appreciate. And that makes them dear to Krishna, especially dear to Krishna. And it's natural, because aham bijapada pita, if Krishna is the father, to see, and all, every living entity has a relationship with Krishna. It is impossible for the living entity to break its relationship with Krishna. So the devotee sees that this soul is Krishna's, but he's gone mad. And therefore he's been placed in the insane asylum, and he's imagining that he's Napoleon, and he's imagining that he's Joan of Arc, and he's imagining that he's a frog, and this one's imagining he's a crow, and this one's imagining that he's Betty Midler. Is that her name?
Bet,
excuse me. It's a bad bet. So imagining these things. But he doesn't see that. See, that's only the body. So the soul, so the devotee sees that this is a soul. How to get him out of it? So prasadam, hearing the holy names, hearing shastra. Like that. So sometimes just like the someone, the psychiatrist goes to the mentally do they have some name for that nowadays? Are you allowed to say that crazy people are crazy? Mm-hmm. Insane asylum. So he goes in there and he says, okay, all those who are Napoleon, come to this side. We're going to give you a test and some medicine or something and some cure. So 15 people come over there and say, Napoleon 1, you come over here for a second. Please, you come here, you're Napoleon. So he goes along with it a little bit for the purpose of getting them to be a little cooperative so that he can administer the medicine properly so that they can be cured. That's also his compassion. But his vision isn't on that level. This is exalted consciousness we're talking about. So, even if we don't have that exalted consciousness, but to have enough faith in someone with that exalted consciousness to follow their instructions and be part of their compassionate movement is also compassionate. and it leads to a true compassion of one's own heart advancement. Is that all right? Did I actually catch your question? More than
it seems like the preachers of the time after they're empowered to disregard the disqualification.
That's what Nityananda Prabhu said to Mahaprabhu. He's Sri Guru, he is the archetypal preacher. So he said, if you kill Jagannath Madhai, then your mission won't be accomplished, because in Kali Yuga everyone is like Jagannath Madhai. They're not the exceptions, they're the rule. So if you kill them and don't be merciful to them, then you won't be able to fulfill your own purpose of spreading the Yuga Dharma. So that's showing that the devotee preacher, who's Nityananda Prabhu, Guru, he is even more merciful than the Lord. So by his compassion, the Lord becomes compassionate. Tar Shakshi Jagaya Madai. Yes?
I just wondered if...
generally can't, and the people who are unable also can't. It's a hard one to exactly understand the application of this. You have to be earning, you know, in this day and age, you have to be earning really a lot to do that. Well, you have, because you can't live simply, practically. So I know when I was giving money to Prabhupada in the 70s, he just appreciated that I was giving money and regulated, because I was actually thinking that the business that I was running was his business and I was managing on his behalf, and I would give him as much as I could and I'd just take what I needed for my maintenance. And he never mentioned to me are you giving 50% and send my checks back or something. So but I think it's fair enough to feel bad that you're not giving 50%, you know. You can always feel a little bad, and or you can balance it out. Let me give more time then. For the rich people, the wealthy people, yeah.
Even if just they gave. If only the leading and wealthy persons of the society agreed to spend 50% of their income in the service of the Lord, there is absolute certainty.
Yeah.
Of converting the cell of pandemonium to the transcendental.
Yeah. I think the 50% is a nice standard, you know, to aim for. And if one, maybe when Krishna sees oneself sincere trying to do that, he'll shower so much money on him that he'll be able to give 90%.